Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
According to the latest annual Eurobarometer report, Irish people are the most satisfied with how democracy works in the EU and they are the most optimistic about the European Union's future. 66% of Irish people say they feel attached to the EU. That's the highest proportion since May 2007. And 76% of us feel that we would be better off inside rather than outside the EU, which does put about one in four who believe the opposite, that we shouldn't be inside the EU. What do you think? 53106. To discuss this, I am joined now by iRexit, which is obviously like the Brexit, but it's the Ireland exit, Freedom to Prosper President Herman Kelly. Herman, you're very welcome.
Hello, Ciara. How are you?
Tell me, first of all, lay out your stall. Why do you think Ireland would be better off outside the EU?
Because national democracy and EU membership are incompatible. If we leave the European Union, we can take back control of our money. Last year we gave it 1 billion euro to the EU budget. We can take back control of the vast wealth of our fisheries. We can have complete control of our immigration policy. We can stop uncontrolled immigration from the European Union. We can take back our full military neutrality now that we have signed up to PESCO, which is permanent structure, military structure of the EU. Ireland is now members of EU battle groups. And of course, last week they had an Irish soldier shot at in Mali. He was part of an EU mission. The most important part is the democratic control. In 2011, the Irish budget was seen and approved in the German Bundestag before it was even seen in Dáil Éireann. Now, that's a scandal. In 2011 to 2013, three men flew in a plane. They were called the Troika, and they ruled Ireland, the economy, and the finances of this country. Why would we allow people we did not elect, we cannot get rid of, to have power over us? We were in a political union before. It was called the British Empire. Eventually, it didn't suit our interests at all. We realized we're better off making our own laws and our own interests, and we decided to leave.
Okay.
Now, that was the first revolution. We are now in the second phase of the revolution for Irish democracy. Take back control of our monies, our laws, and our borders for Irish people alone.
Okay, let's unpick some of that, Herman. First of all, the money situation. We're fastest growing economy in Europe. We're doing pretty well financially. We have been not a net contributor to Europe. We have been a net receiver of Europe since 1973 in the billions, millions.
No, I'm really not wrong. We've been a net contributor since 2014. In 2017, we gave net into the EU budget 200 million euro. Last year, 2018, we gave 1 billion euro. So going forward, Ireland, and now certainly with Brexit, Ireland will be giving more and more money and will be having less and less influence.
But here's the thing. For example, if you look at somewhere like the UK, they were a net contributor of 8 billion into the EU rather than what we would. But there's
a reason.
We're a much
smaller population.
Yes. Let me just finish my point. The point I'm making is there's a reason that we do those things, though. It's because we don't just give those things altruistically. We do them because we have access to markets and trade deals and international agreements that we simply wouldn't have if we were not having that EU membership. We don't have unfettered immigration policies here. We have actually quite...
We have to the EU. 500 million people
have as much access
to come and live and reside in Ireland as EU members.
As do we to their countries.
And look, that we have the highest percentage of doctors in Europe, who I think 39% of our doctors are non-Irish national, yeah. And we've the highest percentage of our own people living outside Ireland.
Can I just point out, Herman, that that's a good thing? Otherwise, Herman, we wouldn't be able to staff our hospital without those doctors. So, are you suggesting we should cut off 40% of our?
We've got stacks of Irish doctors and nurses.
We really don't.
Abroad in Australia, in Canada, in America, who could easily, if they were paid a proper wage, could easily come back and live in Ireland. So that's one of the policies of the party.
These are very piecemeal sorts of things. I mean, overall, we have been a net receiver from the EU in the terms of billions since 1973. Yeah, we don't have unfettered immigration in any true sense. And in terms of you're talking about the Troika coming in, we were in a bailout with the IMF. No country gets bailed out by the IMF without them coming in and having a say on their fiscal policy.
We weren't bailed out. We were stitched up. The Irish taxpayer was stitched up with $64 billion private Franco-German bank debt. And let me deal with the point you made about the net contributor. According to government Department of Finance figures, we are a net recipient of $44 billion cash since we joined the European Union. That's the government figures. Right. You immediately take away the $64 billion bank debt that they imposed upon us. We're $20 billion down already. The $21 billion pension fund, which they also took at the same time, then you're $40 billion down. And the $200 billion worth of fish that the EU boats have taken out of Irish waters since we joined, that means we're €240 billion down since we joined the EU. So we are not a net recipient. And all the money that the farmers get today in CAP, that comes in the end of the scheme, that comes from the Irish taxpayer. It doesn't come from the EU budget. And anyway, what's wrong with Ireland being a normal, democratic country, like 200 nations around the world, that makes its own laws for its own benefit and the interests of its own people? Why do we have to have regulations?
A huge amount of the laws that have come out of Europe have actually improved Irish society in terms of egalitarianism, in terms of human rights, in terms of all of
that. Let me just. We're coming up. We're coming up.
We perhaps, but we're coming up to being out of time. But I just want to make one point to you, Herman. A lot of what has driven Brexit is identity politics. It's nationalism. It's the little England mentality, as people might describe it. Our identity politics do not fit with that because nobody wants to go alone with the UK here. Irish identity has dissociated itself from that entirely. And we are the most satisfied country in Europe in terms of the EU democracy. Well, are you just whistling into the wind?
No, Charlie, you've just had a poll where one quarter of the population want to leave. There's been no
Eurosceptic party. Three quarters is pretty resounding.
There's been no party advocating leaving the EU and becoming a national democratic state again for a very long time. And on the thing about satisfaction, they say they're fairly attached, not very, very attached. And as Charlie Haughey said about himself and his popularity many years ago, the love for the EU is a mile wide and an inch deep. It's very, very shallow.
Let me ask you,
Nice and Lisbon showed very clearly.
One last
there's
question.
Lots of Eurosceptics in Ireland.
Last question, yeah. Herman. What do you say to your detractors that say the main thrust of what's pushing the IREXIT movement is racism, is an anti-immigration policy?
Laughable.
Why would you say? I mean, you do believe in the slogan Ireland for the Irish. Is that not correct?
I believe that Irish people should have democratic control of our own state. Yes, I do. Our speaker tomorrow it's on Saturday in the Mount Argyll in Donegal at 2 o'clock, is Ben Scallon. His mother is Jamaican. How racist can that young man be? It's just ridiculous. It's just laughable.
All right. Okay.
Having control of your own country is not racist. It's being realistic and working in your own interests for the benefit of your own people.
All right. Look, thank you for speaking to us today. That is IREXIT, Freedom to Prosper President Herman Kelly, 53106. What did you think of what you heard? Lots of people getting involved. Some says IREXIT will only gain traction when the UK leaves and the German and the French are shouting the odds more stridently than they currently are. Some says, Ciara, that 1 in 4 ratio for IREXIT shows that 25% of the country are Egypts. Imagine looking at the car crash that is Brexit in a much bigger economy and thinking it would be good for us. Someone else says, though, IREXIT, bring it on. About time we started talking about this. Give two fingers to Johnny Foreigner in Brussels meddling in our affairs and do more deals with our friends in Britain who speak the same language and watch the same TV. Lots more, but we're going to take a short break and we'll come back with more reaction to all of that.
A mixture of dry and rainy spells today with highs of 5 to 10 degrees. And now you're up to date on News Talk.
Thank you for that, Stephanie and Ross. You're listening to Lunchtime Live with Ciara here on News Talk. Do get in touch with us. We want to hear from you about all the things that we have been talking about, like Irexit. We heard from Herman Kelly just before news about why he thinks Ireland should leave the EU. It's to do with taking back the control of our laws and our borders and our immigration policy and our economics. Do you agree? Do you think we would be better off going it alone? 53106. We also talked about the Rebuilding Ireland scheme. You heard it there on the news. Carl Dieter and I were discussing it. This government said it hasn't run out of money. It's just been a massive success and has been oversubscribed, but more money may in fact come on screen. What do you think? Is that the way to go? Should we be funding people to buy houses using those kinds of models? Let us know if you've been affected by it, if you've gotten a house through it, or indeed if you've been rejected by it as well. And we're going to be talking about Lent. Happy Ash Wednesday to you all. Do you give stuff up anymore? Have we moved away from that entirely? Or do people still, you know, stop smoking or drinking or eating sweets, or do they do other things now? Has it all gotten a bit more hip what people do with their Lenten plans, or do they even have them? Let us know what you think. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call Ciara 1890 453 106. You can text me at 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. You can tweet us at Lunchtime Live NT or at Ciara Kelly Doc, or you can email us at lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Now, loads of people getting involved on the whole Irexit idea that we were talking about just at the end of the last hour. Somebody says, Ciara, I believe with my head and my heart that we should remain in the EU. And that's from Ciaran. Someone else says, if we're going to insist on giving this ridiculous notion a buzzword name, can it be something other than Irexit? Sounds awful. I propose air exit. Is that like for air? God, this is getting tricky now reading these things. Air exit. And lots of unreadable, I have to suggest, texts on iRexit too. But Lisa is on the line. Lisa, do you think that there's an appetite here for an exit from the EU, an iRexit?
Hi, Ciara. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I completely disagree with Herman Kelly. I don't think there's any appetite for an iRexit in our country. You only have to look at the shambles that Brexit has become to realise that anybody proposing an iRexit is very irresponsible. I feel I would compare him to Nigel Farage, because Nigel Farage went round with the 350 million for the NHS every week on the bus before the referendum, and that turned out to be a lie. But a lot of the British and the people in the UK believe that and voted to exit on the basis of that lie.
So you're not buying the idea that we'd be better off?
No, I absolutely not buying that idea that we'd be better off at all. I lived overseas for 20 years, and when I came back, the country had utterly changed because there was so much immigration to our country. But I feel that this diversity has been so advantageous for all of us. Our health system could not function without all the people that have come from overseas.
Well, and Herman was suggesting that, because he did point out that a huge number of foreign nationals work as doctors here. I said, how would we staff our hospitals without them? Surely it was a good thing. But he was saying, no, we should get them all to come back from foreign climes. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's an admirable goal, but our health service agency would fall apart if we did not have doctors and nurses from overseas. And they do a terrific job. I've, you know, had first-hand experience of it recently.
Yeah, no, I've had colleagues, and they do a terrific job, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the HSC, the hospitals couldn't function without the doctors and nurses from overseas. And I think there's a lot more of them coming in here than there are Irish doctors and nurses leaving to go overseas. And I mean, going overseas, getting experience over there, and potentially coming back down the road is a wonderful thing, and it's been wonderful for myself and my family. So closing our borders, having Ireland for the Irish, and then turning around and saying that is not a racist statement, I think is fairly incompatible.
Okay, so you're not buying any. What did you make of it? He says that going forward we'll become net contributors to the EU. And indeed, when he added things up the way he did with fisheries and things, he appears to think that we already are net contributors, although other people would not agree with that quite clearly.
I don't agree with that either. I think that is an example of fake news. And he can populate that, he can put that on the social media platforms, and there are people that may believe that. But I think Ireland has been definitely a net contributor from the EU. And if we become
a net receiver
to the EU moving forward, that means that our economy is doing well. And the reason that we're doing well is because we have open borders within the EU, this free movement of people, of finances. And if our country progresses and is to the point where we are a net contributor to the EU, then that means that it's a rising tide raising all boats.
Okay. Yeah, no, I take your point and I'm inclined to agree with you. Let me tell you what the text lines are saying, though. Someone says, Herman Kelly obviously didn't live in Ireland in the 50s and 60s. We were dirt poor. I can understand him being bitter. He's lost his job in Europe with Britain leaving, but he needn't think he can come over here to make a career out of negativity. Someone else says, what a numpty. In 2011, we were broke without our allies. We would have gone bankrupt. And that's from Richard in Monaghan. Someone else says, I would vote to get out. There's too much dictation coming from unelected figures in the EU. Someone else says, what a pleasure to hear that man. I'm all for era amok. I'm sick to my teeth of this EU crap. What was 1916 all about? I think 1916 was to do with getting rid of the British colonial powers here. Is that not what it was about? And someone else says, Ireland is as important to Europe as the Aran Islands are to Ireland. And then someone else says, Ciara, Herman Kelly talking through his rear, the EU membership has been the making of Ireland as an independent nation. Do you think, can I ask you, Lisa, because a lot of the stuff that's coming in on our text line is to do with racism, and some of which I would actually say, I'm not going to read it out, I think actually some of what's coming in is racist. But some of what it is accusations of racism. Do you think that some of what fuels things like Irexit, those kind of nationalistic, I suppose, positions, those kind of identity politics, are they fueled by a fear of immigration? Are they fueled by a fear of outsiders other than, you know, native ethnic Irish people being here? What's driving that? Because we have such a tiny number of immigrants, really. We've 12%, we've 88% homogenous here, which is very high compared to the rest of Europe, and only 12% non. Why would people be banging that drum here, do you think?
I think Ireland has traditionally been so used to being a white Christian country that to see different people coming here stirs something within people where they want a homogenous group. But I think you need to get to know individual people from every culture. And as soon as you know people from different cultures and you speak to them and you learn about their culture and their history, then they become people to you. Yeah. And they don't become others. So it's about, you know, reaching out to people, immigrants that have come here, and getting to know them on a personal basis. And then you realize, you know what, we have more in common with them than we have differences.
I think that's true of probably everybody. But,
you know, everybody bleeds red. That's what I always think. So, you know, no matter what colour skin, what religion.
It's interesting you mentioned the Christian thing. You said we were used to being a white Christian country, but it's the epitome of Christianity to help your neighbour out who's in trouble, like a refugee. I mean, that it's arguable you couldn't be more Christian than to do something like that.
That's very true. But, like, also they talk about the Bible talks about the Pharisees up the front, you know, bleating on about, you know, the good that they do. And there's too often people want to be, you know, talk about doing good, but at the same time, and acting are not actually the same thing.
All right. Look, thank you for talking to us. Lots of really good points. Well made there. Thank you for that indeed, Lisa. Ciarán is also on the line. Ciarán, what do you think about Irexit?
Hi, Ciara. I have to say, it kind of really makes me angry, to tell you the truth. Like, I'm old enough to remember what this country was like. And today, I just love it. I love the fact that we've got so many people coming over here. And people seem to be forgetting as well, these Irexiters, like why the EEC was started up in the first place,
yeah,
to bring peace to Europe. You know, and like, look at all the roads and stuff like that were built in this country over the 70s, 80s, 90s that would never have gotten built if it wasn't for them. And they've brought in employment laws. And like, people go on as well about the bureaucracy of the EU. Because of all those rules and regulations, it's so much easier and less bureaucratic to trade with our European neighbours. And like, take back control. Like, that's ridiculous. As we've seen from the Brexit debates, like, if we want to continue dealing with the EU after we leave, then we're just going to have to follow all their rules and regulations anyway. So I just don't see that argument. And as for that money that we put in, the money that we're contributing is helping all the poorer countries, just as we were helped when we joined in the 1970s. And that's just going to improve their economies. And it's going to be less people wanting to come to Ireland when their economies start to grow.
I know. I think you're absolutely right. Do you have any sympathy for the notion that economically, if we, you know, had our own fisheries or, you know, control over our waters — we do have extensive waters, but they are EU waters because we are an EU country — or that, you know, I think they like to talk about the bailout quite a bit in terms of what we did and what we paid back, and therefore we were crippled with debt. And there's an element of truth that we paid back a lot, and there were things maybe could have been done differently. But if you look at somewhere like Greece that took a different road to us, they're still in a much worse position today than we are in economically. So there is an argument that we actually did the right thing by kind of going the road of stability. What do you think about all of those things?
Well, look, I'm not saying that the EU is perfect. By no means am I saying that. And like, just as our own government, they're not perfect. But like, you don't leave something because it's not perfect, because there isn't some flaws in it. I think it's like, to me, I actually like, as I say, the way that Europe influences our policies. I'm not sure I trust our politicians to do a better job than them. That's another thing with Brexit. They're thinking, well, look, we'll take back control and we'll do a brilliant job. I don't see any evidence that the British government would do a better job than the EU would.
No, I think it's actually the opposite in many ways. I think what has been shown to have been kind of, I suppose, parroted as what was going to happen with Brexit has been found largely to be false. You know, the money for the NHS and all of those kinds of ideas that were put out there, they weren't true. And in fact, if you're worried about what EU is telling your population, your national government could be telling them something even more flawed, perhaps, as it were. Do you think that I've read a lot of stuff about Brexit and about the EU and about our mentality, and a lot of the Brexit rhetoric was about, you know, Britain being great again and going it alone. Britain saw itself as an imperialist power. We've never seen ourselves as an imperialist power. We were a colony. Do you think there's any argument that we take external rule better than a country like Britain?
Well, look, let's just go back a bit here. De Valera was all about Ireland and building up our own industries and being very, very insular. And it wasn't, what was it? I can't remember his name now. The politician in the 1960s.
Lamass.
Lamass, who opened up our economy. And like, do we really want to be going back that way, where we're going insular again?
Yeah, no, I don't think that we do. But, you know, just lastly on all of this, to do with you know, the EU was formed, obviously, it started off as the Benelux countries and then the EEC, and then, you know, morphed into where we're now with the 27. Peace, have we lost sight of how important peace is? Europe was at war for centuries. We had two in the last century, yeah. But we had wars about every three decades, on average.
Yeah.
So many, yeah. Franco-Prussian war, there was many, many wars. Have we lost sight? Is the EU almost a victim of its own success, and that we've forgotten what it is to see mayhem and, you know, death and fighting between countries in Europe? Have we lost the lesson that the EU kind of taught us?
Well, obviously we have, and it's a great pity. And like, the only way, I'm not even going to go down the road of, you know, let's break up the EU and have lots of fighting. Then people realize, oh my God, it was such a good idea. You know, but one thing, just one last thing I would say though, and I think it is one of the things that influenced the Brexit vote. I do think that the EU did expand maybe a bit too quickly. I think maybe over, let's say, a 10-year period, you bring in one or two countries, whatever. Jumping up to 27 as quickly as it did, I don't think did it any favours.
Okay. Do you think that is that because we got too big too quickly, or do you think the countries that we brought in weren't ready? What is your concern around that?
Well, like I mentioned earlier on about building up the economies of these new countries that come in. Like, let's, you know, bring in a couple of them, give them ample resources to get their economies up and running. Then once they're kind of, you know, washing their own face, so to speak, bring in some more. Because I think, you know, by bringing in so many all at once, then maybe an overabundance of people from these poorer economies did go into the UK. It's only my personal opinion.
Yeah, no, and very valid. And look, thank you for coming on and spelling all of that out to us. Thank you for that indeed. Someone says, Ciara, the fishing industry was destroyed in Ireland by the EU. People lost their livelihoods. I think there's an argument that that's true, but far more people gained livelihoods, I would suggest, in other industries than fishermen lost their livelihoods. And that's not to say that that's irrelevant, the fishermen's industry, but overall our economy has done well. It hasn't faltered. Someone else says, I support iRexit, but it would require cooperation from the EU to ensure, well, we've seen how that went across the water, to ensure a smooth transition. I'd love to see a thorough debate setting out the clear benefits of membership. Access to the markets is incorrect, as in frictionless trade. Peace in Europe was not the EU, it was NATO and the USAF, and that's Neil in Wicklow, a classical liberal. Classical liberal is a very interesting term. I'm not going to tell you what I think it also means, but a classical liberal. The libertarian brigade have always very interesting views. Someone says, Ciara, iRexit sounds like nationalism and racism trying to dress itself up as patriotism. If it wasn't for your pumping money into our infrastructural projects, can you imagine a road network and what state the economy would be in? And that's from Brian and Lucan. And maybe last person we'll take on this for now is Nessa. Nessa's on the line. Nessa, you say without the EU, your little boy Alex wouldn't be here. What does that mean?
Yes, Ciara, that's right. Nice to talk to you. My son asked when he was born, he got aspirated meconium. He had meconium in his
okay,
system.
Okay, yeah.
And the treatment for that they suggested was to send him over to Sweden for ECMO.
Okay.
So, yeah, they said he was in a bad way. They said that out of every 9 babies as bad as Alex, 8 don't make it.
Okay.
So he definitely needed treatment.
So he was sent outside into another EU country for specialist care?
Yeah, he was sent over to Sweden for this ECMO treatment. He was over there for about a week. And because that was EU funded, you know, they picked up the tab for all that. We wouldn't have been able to afford it.
Okay, that's amazing. And is he well now, can I ask?
He's great now, yeah. He's had a complete recovery from the meconium. He'll be 3 now in 2 weeks.
Ah, that's a lovely story. And so obviously you feel quite a degree of fondness then towards the EU.
Yes, because
you
felt pro-EU, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised that you are. If it wasn't for Alex, and that is a lovely story, and I'm very glad obviously that that worked out for you, but if it wasn't for Alex, would you also think that there were advantages to the EU in general?
Well, I do still think, and as our story highlights, there's strength in numbers. Ireland's quite small. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to have the backing of the EU, yeah, and then we have access to their facilities.
Yeah, we do.
That's what happened for us.
We also have access to their markets without tariffs, which, you know, is an enormous thing. People often from the iRexit side keep saying that the you know, Britain is our largest market, but I think it's about a third of our markets now. I don't think it is any longer our largest market. And indeed, having that kind of frictionless trade and that tariff-free trade is of a huge advantage to us. As a straw poll in your world, because I'm looking at the figure here that 1 in 4 of us think we should leave, that we would be pro-iRexit. It wouldn't reflect anecdotally the people I know. I wouldn't have thought it was as high as 1 in 4. Do you know many people yourself who would be pro iRexit?
No, most people in my circle as well would be saying pretty much the same.
Yeah,
perhaps
I just know the wrong people, but I'm wondering. I'm wondering about these figures a little bit. But look, thank you for that. I'm delighted.
It might be first day to you, Ciara.
Maybe there
I might think it'd be fred safe.
That could be true. Listen, thank you for talking to us, Nessa. Thank you for that. And maybe this is maybe the one last listener. Pat is on the line. Pat, what do you think about iRexit?
I know. I was just making the point to your researcher that the European empire is something that we would be so well out of. We were so many years in the British Empire and fought to get out of that. And then, 50 years later, we dive back into another organization where the rules are made elsewhere. The court is staffed by people from a different culture. And basically, we're a tiny cog in a huge machine.
What do you think the advantages would be to us, Pat, if we were to leave?
I think we'd get our sovereignty and our independence back, which is, after all, what a lot of Irish people fought and died for.
Okay,
and, but it was just sold away for the benefit of better farm prices.
What do you mean that we get our sovereignty back? What would actually change in reality?
Well, the current situation is that the vast majority of laws that you and I suffer under are made in Brussels by people who have very little regard for any particular Irish point of view, and they are, generally speaking, not Irish, and they are then enforced on us through various mechanisms. I was a civil servant for all my working life, and I actually got to the level where I was dealing with EU officials, and just aware of the fact of how completely they were into domination and power and running things their way.
Okay. And were you a civil servant in Ireland?
Yes.
So you see, one of our civil servants. So you would feel that perhaps the bureaucracy coming from Europe undermines some kind of home democracy. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, the actual structure of the EU is very similar to the structure of totalitarian states like Tsarist Russia or Nazi Germany, in that there's a talking chop of a parliament. The real decisions are made by half a dozen or a dozen fairly shadowy figures whom you probably couldn't even name, but they're so far away from you that you have no contact with them at all. When I was a civil servant working in Ireland, there would be half a dozen politicians who would have known me by name, and if I made a cock up on a decision, they would ring me up and say, hey, you've made a mistake here, my constituent, this, and I would go back and look at it, and sometimes they were right and sometimes I was right. It was an actual real working democracy. Europe is nothing like that.
What would you say, though, Pat, to people who say comparing living in Europe to living under a totalitarian state like under Stalin or under Nazi Germany is actually a terrible insult and a trivialisation of what it was to live in those autocratic situations, because people were, you know, rocked up in concentration camps, they were sent to gulags, and we don't have that. So it's kind of a hyperbole that insults the reality of people who suffered.
I wasn't talking about the totality of life. I was talking about the political structure, and the political structure where there was no, where the ordinary man in the street, where there is no real respect for democracy. And, you know, I wasn't talking about totalitarian states. I was giving two examples of states with similar structures.
What about our MEPs? I mean, we're about to have European elections. What about the fact that we do, in fact, vote, you know, for European politicians who go to the parliament? You know, loads, like, off the top of my head, Lynn Boylan, Ming Flanagan. You could ream off rakes of them, you know.
Yeah. Name me three things they've done which have made a difference in Ireland. Name me one.
Well, I would say, to be fair, that the European Court of Human Rights has had a positive effect on many of our laws in Ireland.
You were talking about the MEPs. Now you've moved to talking about the European Court of Human Rights. The European Court is exactly as the British courts were in Ireland, something where if you're the in-group, you're the right culture, you speak the right language, you win the cases. I know, because as an Irish civil servant, we were perpetually defending cases against them, and we were always losing against the EU, quite simply because they knew the language, and they were the in people, and we were the out.
Was it because justice was served? I mean, I'm thinking of various women, for example, who travelled to do with the repeal of the Eighth Amendment and all issues around that travelled to Europe, and we lost cases there. But as an Irish woman, I was very glad we lost those cases.
Well, I'm not saying that every decision that the European Court has made was wrong, but I'm also saying that it's entirely possible that Irish courts on their own can also make social improvements. I mean, the European Union seems to be garnering credit for everything positive that has ever happened in Ireland, which ignores the fact that we did actually run our own country moderately well for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And in the process, by the way, I'm old enough to remember crossing the border when there was a border between a different country called the UK, and it was absolutely no hassle for ordinary people. You drove across and waved at the guy. If you were importing a truckload of widgets, you had to go through some paperwork, but so what?
So you don't see any issue with the border?
Well, I go back to the way it was, and it was no issue then.
I would suggest a whole population of nationalists in Northern Ireland would disagree with you.
Oh, well, that's, again, it's slightly different. I'm talking about the administrative impact of Brexit, which has been hyped up by the media beyond all reality, into this situation where, you know, the world will grind to a halt.
I lived
in that world, and it didn't grind to a halt.
I think, Pat, though, with respect to you, you can't differentiate crossing the border with widgets and saying, well, look, the economy won't grind to a halt with dissident paramilitary activity being kicked off by a border being in place in the first place. I think to try and put that as a side issue is one of the Achilles heels of Brexit. They forgot about it.
That's a separate issue again.
You keep changing the issue,
Ciara, when I'm making a point. I mean, I absolutely I lived also through the beginning of the troubles in Derry and all and all the rest of it, and you know, I know the situation, but that's a separate point from what I was saying about the hyping up of the admin of Brexit.
True, but I don't think you can take them down as sort of totally disparate points when all of these things will be affected, and that is an issue. A lot of people are texting, a lot of people saying, I don't suffer under any EU laws. Thanks to the EU laws, we have decent holidays, sick pay, health and safety, consumer rights. If that's suffering, bring it on. And as for the Nazi Germany analogy, the EU is nothing like the structure of Nazi Germany. And many people saying that, and other people are saying, even referring to the European Union as the European Empire is kind of ludicrous.
Okay, well, maybe I put some thought into people's minds. Perhaps they should look up the structure of some totalitarian states and compare it with the current European Union before they come back with an immediate text answer. I think they'll find some similarities there.
Okay. All right. Look, thanks for speaking to us, Pat. Pat's getting a lot of people texting. Someone says, that last chat, Pat, a prime example of a blinkered conspiracy theorist who has no idea how the EU works. Pat would argue that he did and that he worked in the civil service. But keep your texts coming, 53106. I would love to know what people think about this. I'm not getting a sense on our text line that there is an appetite for an Irexit. Most people seem to think it is far preferable to going it alone. I think a lot of us remember the 70s and living on the equivalent of Spam or whatever it was back then, and our crappy roads and all of that. I think that our memory is long enough to remember pre-EU stuff, and it wasn't pretty here, and we were very insular, and it wasn't always good. But let me know what you guys think. That's much more important. 53106. Coming up after this, are you giving up anything for Lent?